The Washington News Bureau of the American Broadcasting Company presents From the Capitol, a public affairs program from the nation's capital. This is Pete Clapper of the ABC Washington News staff. Our guest is Congressman Leslie Ahrens, Republican of Illinois, the minority whip of the House of Representatives and a member of the key House Armed Services Committee. Congressman Ahrens, it's a pleasure to welcome you to this program from the Capitol. Now let's start with this one. What have you got to say about the State of the Union?
You mean my interpretation of the State of the Union or the President's interpretation? I rather imagine you mean what I think of the President's State of the Union message last week. Well, I must be brutally frank, and as I said in a statement shortly thereafter, that it was a rather comprehensive statement, but pretty political in nature. I think he touched some bases which he has no idea of touching during this session of Congress in his request for certain pieces of legislation. One of the baffling things to me is, and stays with me at the present time, is whether or not he will really push for these various items, proposals that he mentioned in his State of the Union message. I doubt seriously that he will. One of the things about it is that I think it had many contradictions, the statement. Furthermore, I think it was notable for some omissions, shall we say, such as the question of raising our national debt limit, which is fundamental, and certainly which should be called to the attention of the American people with real emphasis.
Well, what do you see as the key issues in this Congress?
I would say that, of course, uppermost in the minds of all American people, and certainly with the administration, must be the question of our international relations. I think that is uppermost, how we continue to perform from the standpoint of foreign policy. And if the president remains firm, he's certainly going to have the support of the Congress of the United States on both sides of the political aisle, because this is not a partisan question. The other question will be the big one, the one that will be debated and will be argued forcibly, will be reciprocal trade. At the moment, I'm not certain in my own mind, and I doubt that anyone knows exactly what the president is going to request in his expansion of this program, which expires on June the 30th. This, however, I think will be the most debatable question before the Congress during this session.
Speaking of international problems being a key issue, one facet of this is the request of the president for authority to buy U.N. bonds, and I notice there's an increasing groundswell of Republican opposition to this. Where do you stand on it?
Well, I wouldn't say it was only groundswell of Republican opposition. I think it's true that many, many Republicans are against it, and I think we'll find many, many Democrats against it, too. This is a question that's going to have to be thoroughly aired when it comes up here, and it will be, and it should be, for the enlightenment of the people in the country to know exactly what we're doing. There are too many people in the country believe, as I do, that the other nations of the world are not doing their fair share in support of the United Nations. This doesn't necessarily mean that the United Nations should be abolished, but it does mean that we should, in equal terms, support the United Nations for what they're trying to do. And the idea that we're going to have to be the all-out and only and lone supporter of the United Nations and the cost thereof just isn't going to be bought by the American people, in my humble opinion.
I'd like to turn now to matters of defense. As a member of the very important House Armed Services Committee, what can you tell us about defense this year? Will the president get all he wants for it?
Well, a quick guess would be yes. He'd pretty well get all the money that is requested on national defense. I think historically Congress has done exactly that. Whenever a request has been made, we have taken a good look at it. But always with a view of having $1 more than needed rather than $1 less, Congress has pretty well gone along with the idea of supplying sufficient and ample money to carry out our defense purposes. In our Armed Services Committee this year, again, we will have posture hearings. I'm sure we will begin to understand very clearly exactly why the president requests this and that. And then in our own considered opinion, we will have to tell the Congress what the picture, show the Congress what the picture is. All in all, I'd say, knowing a little about what we might anticipate in the way of the budget, we're going to have a rather stepped-up demand for additional expenditures for defense this year. And I would hazard to guess that Congress will pretty much go along with it.
What criticism have you got of the reserve call-up?
Well, I released a statement just last week about the reserve call-up. There are deficiencies in our reserve program today, and I think Congress should do something about trying to help the Defense Department iron out these deficiencies. I wouldn't say that all the trouble with the program lies with the Defense Department. I think possibly even Congress is to blame in part for the shortcomings of this program. And when we have these hearings, I'm sure that the Defense Department will want to go into detail about them. Then each member of our committee, and there are 37 of us on this Armed Services Committee of the House, a nonpartisan, nonpolitical committee, that we will do our best to try to iron out these little difficulties that continuously rise in the program. with the extreme hope that we can somehow perfect a better reserve program in these United States, make it more efficient, make it more to the point where it fulfills its purpose and objective, and thereby have a better reserve program in the end than we presently have.
But, Congressman Ahrens, can you pinpoint specifically any particular mistake that the Defense Department made in this call-up?
Well, I don't know about the particular mistake, except let's use this as an example. For instance, some of these boys who have had 2 years or 3 years of service have been called back to active duty. Some boys who went into the 6 months program who might well have been called in their place to fill in these gaps of shortages within the numbers in these divisions. Plus the fact that in going back through their records to call up these individuals, they used the information they had in their records. Speaking of the Defense Department, he may have been as long ago as 3 years or 4 years ago in a certain category when he left the service, but presently his position has changed. He may have completed a college course. He may now be qualified to do something better than be a truck driver, in which he left the category he left the services in. In other words, let's try to fit these fellas into a more useful place when they go into the service in keeping with the position that they find themselves in today. And that's just one of the little things that I think they're going to have to do down there, is keep abreast day by day, or month by month at least, with more knowledge as to what the individual is doing today, so that when they call him, they know they're calling the right guy for the right place to do the right thing.
And you think there may be legislative changes to make sure this is done?
Well, whether this takes legislation or whether this can be done administratively within the department, we'll just have to wait and see. But this is just one of many suggestions I think can be mentioned. For instance, some of these boys were called to service, and of course they complained they didn't have anything to do, and that's true. There's a lack of equipment, lack of up-to-date equipment. And if we're going to fully utilize the services of these boys, why then we ought to have the equipment on hand to take care of them at wherever they land.
Now, here's a poser for you. There's talk in the military that the National Guard, not the reserve system, but the National Guard really doesn't do a job and might be dispensed with. How do you feel about that?
Well, I don't think we'll do any such thing as dispense with the National Guard. No, that's a good tight question you're asking me, but I'm sure Congress is not going to do any such thing as dispose with the National Guard. No. And I think the National Guard is aware that by units they can be federalized and can be called up, and so you don't hear too much complaint from the standpoint of those individuals who serve in the Guard.
I'd like to turn to the space picture. There are reports now that the budget for civilian space research this year will be something like $3.7 billion. Last year, or this current fiscal year, it's $2.9. This is a big kick in the pocketbook. Now, do you think Congress will go along with this?
Well, I imagine they'll go along with an increase. I hesitate to predict exactly what Congress will do because, as you know, and being around here as much as you are, this is a rather unpredictable body on occasion.
But I would say,
on the whole, that there will be more money made available for this. Apparently, there's a determined effort that we have to step up our research and our development in this field, and that this business of going to the moon sometime is really a serious business, and they're going to try to ask Congress to do better.
Okay, now I'd like to get to one of the hot spots, a surprise in the State of the Union message by the President. This is the request of the President for the standby power to cut taxes in an economic slump. What's your position on that?
Well, really, that was a surprise, and I think it rather surprised all of us who hadn't previously been acquainted with what was in the message prior to the time it was brought up here. I did happen to read it in the morning, and this was a distinct surprise. I'm sure that this amounts to almost abolishing the Ways and Means Committee of the House, because under the Constitution, we say that only Congress can levy taxes, et cetera. And so I think this surprise will come to naught, shall we put it that way, because we're just going to continue to do that in the Congress, and I hope that's exactly what we do, because we should not grant to any president, regardless of party, or at any time, grant to him the right to do some of these things that he has asked standby provision to do. This wouldn't be good in the long run.
Do you see any possible eensy bit of politics in this?
Yes, and being somewhat of a politician on occasion, I'd say there was a lot of politics involved in this because maybe some people don't know it, but all of us recognize that 1962 there's an election, and believe me, we're going to have a great big dose of politics come the election of 1962, and it's already started.
And you think possibly a president who's asking for this extra tax power might be playing a little politics?
Yes, playing a little politics, plus the fact that he mentioned certain things in this message, which I'm sure the president is not going to ask Congress to do this session. In other words, I doubt that some of the things he discussed in there in the way of proposals, that they'll even be pushed up here in the respective committees of the House to try to get them out on the floor of the House. And should he push on the president, I think some will remain in the committee, never see the light of day. Others might not clear the Rules Committee, And on occasion, one or two or three of these things might well be defeated on the floor of the House if we have the ample time to debate them.
Let's go to one of those that might stay in the Ways and Means Committee, the issue of medical care for the aged through Social Security. If it does, as some of the leaders now expect it will, stay in committee and not get out, what political effect will this have? Any at all?
Well, no, I don't think it'll have near the political effect some of the people are worrying about, and those who can continually say this is a political football. I think we ought to just forget it. The question is it right or wrong? And I'm not going to worry about whether it has any political effect in the election this fall. This thing is either right or wrong on the basis of the way it was presented, and if the Ways and Means Committee, composed of 15 majority members and 10 minority members in their aggregate thinking, believe that it should stay in the committee, should not be brought out on the floor of the House, then I think that's a clear indication of what the thinking in the Congress itself is.
How about some comment, Congressman Ahrens, and your reaction to the proposals by the president in the field of civil rights? Do you think there was too much, too little? Was it political? Was it non-political?
Well, it was completely political for the very simple reason they're going to do nothing about civil rights during this session. I think I would come the closest on making a good guess on that of any of these proposals we're talking about. They simply will not do anything about it, particularly in an election year. Plus the fact that I'm sure during the campaign, while President Kennedy talked about this thing, they had no intention of doing anything about civil rights during last session or this session.
What about the prediction we have today from Speaker McCormick that the postal rate hike will pass Congress next week?
Well, very frankly, as a Republican whip, I have not checked with any of the members on our side of the aisle as to their attitude at all, so I couldn't even make a good guess as to what our membership would do. However, if the Speaker of the House says that they're going to pass a bill, it's apparent that they have the votes to do it, and it probably will come to pass that way. I wouldn't be surprised.
What about this bill for the Department of Urban Affairs and Housing? Will this get from the Republicans the cry of big government, centralizing of the government?
Yes, I should think it would, yes.
And this would be the basis for an attack on it?
I would think that would be one of the things we would use in our attack on this particular program. And frankly, again, I say this a little early in this session. I haven't had the opportunity of talking to very many members about it, so I wouldn't know exactly what their approach to it would be. However, this will not just slide through as something that's going to happen on Tuesday or Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. Looking at the big picture of the Republican position now, will one of the big issues be the growing centralization of government in the White House? Is this a valid point?
Well, let's say it's the ever-growing concentration within the White House and within the administration. Yes, I think that's one of our vital points that we can discuss during the campaign and which we can advantageously use as we debate these issues. Yes, because this is a continuing, and by this message, the implication is there that Uncle Sam is the lone man who can do anything about all these problems, whereas I, as one Republican, certainly don't believe that.
And would you class fiscal responsibility or the lack thereof as another of the big domestic issues?
Yes, and while it's hard always to make the average rank-and-file individual on the street be interested or concerned about fiscal responsibility, that is a basic problem. And I think those of us who are responsible and in responsible positions must begin to inform the people better about what is involved. Uncle Sam doesn't have a dime. Every dime he has, he takes away from the people first. So that we've got to say to them, if we need more money for defense, if we need more money for our international relations, then surely we're going to have to stop doing some of these things that we propose to do at the present time and shun aside or put away for the time being on the shelf some of these proposals or objectives that the administration has in mind until such a time as we can afford to pay for them.
Now, on that subject, you seem to be talking of a priority list of legislation. Will the Republicans come forth with such a list?
I'm not sure we'll have a priority list, but I think we'll come up with some kind of a statement which will clarify in the minds of the people in the country exactly what our purposes and our objectives are. The last thing I would want is the average person in America to think that we approach all of this either from a defeatist attitude or from this attitude of just being against something, because that is not the case. We're for constructive, objective legislation which is helpful to the people in this country and which will help our country to remain basically and economically sound.
Now, Mr. Ahrens, Chairman Cannon of the Appropriations Committee, I believe, says that the budget which the president proposes this year, which he says will be a balanced budget, will be precariously balanced at best and probably, in Mr. Cannon's view, not balanced at all. Do you think it will be balanced? And if not, what do you propose?
Well, I think Mr. Cannon, the chairman of the Appropriation Committee, made a very good statement. I think it will be presented in the form of a balanced budget, but in reality it will not be balanced at all. And again, here's where Congress can come into the picture to some degree. If Chairman Cannon of the Appropriations Committee will hit real hard will work real diligently within his committee to reduce some of these expenditures. Possibly we can move toward a balanced budget. But I would say the realization of a balanced budget seems to me to be pretty far off.
Now we come to a very important issue and a surprise, again, I believe, in the State of the Union message. This was the president's continued insistence, how firm an insistence we have yet to see, on general public school aid. Can you comment on that?
Well, if we're to interpret what is generally known as federal aid to education, similar to the bill that was proposed last year, I would say it doesn't have a Chinaman's chance. No such bill will pass the Congress during this session. There might be an abbreviated bill. There might be a bill that had was incorporated in last year's proposal, just one little segment thereof or something that's like a new trend toward just loans to colleges and universities. Something like that might be proposed. But speaking as a general aid to education bill, there just isn't going to be any such bill during this session. It would not pass the Congress.
Now, why wouldn't it pass? Is it going to be the religious issue again?
Well, that would be in part, again, which was brought up last year, emphasized last year, plus the fact that basically and fundamentally there, I would say the majority of members of Congress are against the business of the federal government providing federal funds to pay teachers' salaries, which immediately means that we begin to move into the control of federal control on our education system in the country.
Now, the president is well aware of these arguments from last year. With this in mind, why do you think he proposed this again?
You don't mind asking hard questions, and so I'll try to give you a good answer as I see it, and that is this, that I think it was a purely political maneuver, that he did it to satisfy some of the group who are continually demanding that he fulfill and carry out the promises he made during the 1960 campaign.
Okay, now I'd like to ask you some questions about Illinois politics, about which I must confess I don't know too much. What's the situation for Senator Dirksen there?
Well, I'd say his situation is very good.
Who's his opponent?
His opponent is going to be Congressman Sidney Yates of Chicago. It just happens in the state of Illinois, historically, we have always had one senator from Cook County, Chicago, and one senator from downstate. We presently have the senior senator from Illinois, Mr. Douglas, from Cook County. Senator Dirksen is from downstate. It's Senator Dirksen's time to run again. And I would say that even the Democrats downstate are not going to permit Cook County to have both of the senators from the state of Illinois, regardless of party. So, with the governor from Cook County, with Mayor Daley of Cook County being the Democratic political boss completely and wholly of the state of Illinois, I don't think the people downstate are going to turn over or pass over to Mr. Daley any more control of our great state. And so I would say that bringing out a candidate from Chicago has very much helped Senator Dirksen in his approach to being elected this fall.
Now, how about your own hopes?
Well, my own hopes, fortunately, in the redistricting last fall in the state of Illinois, they left my 17th congressional district alone. The boundaries are exactly the same, and for which I am grateful. And I would anticipate that the Republican percentage of vote in that district will be stronger this year than it has been for some time.
Now, let's look at the bigger picture in the fall. There has been some comment, I believe, from Minority Leader Halleck of the House. He thinks that he may be the Speaker next year. Do you?
Well, I hope he will be, and I'd like to vote for him for Speaker. And that means that we're going to have to pick up 44 members on our side of the aisle. Now, this is a Herculean task, of course, but believe me, that's exactly what we're shooting for. We're going to try to get them. And don't be too surprised if we do. I think there's a trend going on in this country toward conservatism, whether you like it or not. And when I say conservative, I don't mean reactionary or mossback. I mean a person can be a conservative and still be a progressive and still be for those things which are beneficial to the country. I think such a trend is on today, asking for better and sounder government, fiscal responsibility, and so forth. So that I think our chances of doing just exactly what we have in mind are picking up every day.
Congressman Ahrens, it could be that the president feels somewhat the way you do, that there is a move toward the conservative, because Republican Chairman Miller argues that the president is trying to usurp the middle of the road now in an effort to get Eisenhower-type votes and so on. Do you feel that way?
Well, without saying so publicly, I think that's exactly what he's trying to do.
In other words, the president is moderating from the...
No question in my mind at all, but what he's moderating a little bit. Mm-hmm. The only thing is I don't want him to get over where we are.
You were there first?
Yeah, we were there first.
I'd like to turn now to some general questions about the Congress. There are always complaints that the Congress is old-fashioned, that the seniority system brings Southern conservatives, generally, who stay in Congress for years and years, into the foreground, and that this is not representative of the people. How do you feel about it?
Well, let me say that I'm one of those who have thought much and studied quite a bit about this business of seniority in the House. And I think it's the only answer to the way we can run this Congress. For instance, take on our Armed Services Committee, and it is non-political wholly, completely. We have 37 members on the Armed Services Committee. It just happens that Chairman Vinson, who's been here now 48 years, is the chairman. Seniority put him there a long time ago, and he'll remain there as long as he's a member of Congress and that party controls. But if we were to change and we were trying to select anyone on the committee, regardless of seniority, why, the first thing would happen, we'd be in the greatest political row. It might not be completely partisan, but would be because of some fellow on the committee was liked better than another, regardless of his capabilities or anything else. And so it would end up in a furor, and I think it would prove detrimental to the best workings of these committees. And so I think staying with the seniority committee is the answer to this problem, and I see nothing that would change my mind at the present time that would be a benefit to committee service in the Congress.
You foresee no major overhaul, then, in the congressional system as it now exists, Congressman?
No, I do not. And let me say in all frankness to you that I think this business of staying in Congress a long time has indeed its value. In this respect, because it seems that the longer you stay here, the more you learn. Maybe you never learn enough, but you certainly improve as time goes on staying down here because you continuously learn, and I imagine Chairman Vinson is still learning after 48 years.
I'd like to turn to a specific. The Congo is causing a furor among congressmen and senators these days. What about the Congo debate? Is this going to be a real issue this year?
Well, I think it's a little too early to say. And, of course, there are sides being drawn in this matter. Much depends, of course, on what the final analysis or accounting is on what happens in the Congo. But I think it's fair that we discuss these matters. Whether we make it partisan or not is something else. But I think it's perfectly legitimate that the Congress discuss these matters as to what is the best thing to do.
How about this supplemental request, I believe you called, for $3 billion more for Latin American aid, the Alliance for Progress?
Well, again, I'll have to speak just as one member of Congress, but I certainly am going to watch with intense interest exactly what happens at this meeting of the Organization of American States, which takes place, I believe, the latter part of this month. I'm going to be terribly interested in the attitude of those people who represent these various nations in Central and South America. I think what they do, or what they have to say, may well influence me in some of the conclusions that I reach as to about how far we should go in trying to help these people down there. I go back to what happened in Belgrade when the so-called neutralist nations met. And never was I so shocked or disturbed as I was, for at this particular time, Khrushchev determined then that he would resume nuclear testing. And not one word of condemnation from any single one of the so-called neutralists. And I'm often reminded of what Mr. Khrushchev reportedly has at one time said, that when asked about neutral, he said, neutral on whose side? I want these people, if they're going to be neutral on our side.
Thank you very much, Mr. Arams, for being our guest on From the Capitol.